T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to hour number two of Hardline on this beautiful, sunny Sunday morning. I'm Brenda Alesi. Joe Beamer is off today. And Carol Calabrese is with us. Carol has more than 30 years' experience in government, in politics in Western New York. And we have so much to chew on in this last hour, Carol. I want to continue, though, to talk about what's been happening in Albany, because on Thursday, Letitia James, who was a New York State Attorney General, filed a lawsuit seeking to dissolve the NRA, the National Rifle Association. There are a lot of interesting angles to this story, Carol, including the fact that Letitia James, who is a Democrat, has been denounced by the NRA, as you would, of course, expect. But they said she once referred to the group as a terrorist organization during the 2018 campaign and vowed to investigate it. Do you think this is sour grapes on her part, Carol?
Well, first of all, she did refer to the NRA as a terrorist organization during her campaign. I believe that this is going to be one of the best recruiting tools the NRA ever got handed to them. you know, if there ever was proof positive that the progressive left really is after the NRA and what it does, this is it. And, you know, Brent, I've said this on your show. I've said it on the morning show with Susan and Brian many, many times. There's one thing you can always count on the progressive left to do, and that is overreach. And that's exactly what she did. Now, this will play very well in New York State. Don't get me wrong. For her base in New York State, this will play very well. But if you're a Democrat candidate running for the House or the Senate out in Montana or Colorado or down south, you better believe that this is going to be brought up in those respective states. Someone said on one of the legal analysts said that now it's alleged that the leadership of the NRA has misappropriated funds, even though no one has ever been charged criminally. This is a civil suit. So that's the allegation. You would think that a board of directors of the NRA, if they had discovered that their leadership was misappropriating millions and millions of dollars, would have changed leadership. They've not done that. But even putting that aside, one lawyer said, you know, if there are victims here, the victims are the members of the NRA who have paid dues, and if that money was misappropriated, they were indeed victimized. Generally, you would have a solution in a lawsuit that would compensate the victims for that injustice, i.e. you would require the organization to pay back money to those individuals. You would not take the organization away and dissolve it. I mean, that's the overreach here. If you're really concerned about the members being defrauded, you would call for them to be reimbursed and made whole, not dissolve an organization. So this is political. It's an overreach. It's a big plus for the NRA, and it's going to be a plus for the Republican Party and Donald Trump nationwide going into the campaign when it comes to the issue of the Second Amendment. And by the way, talk about bad timing. She does this at a time when gun sales have gone through the roof. The FBI in July did 3.6 million background checks for gun purchases. So this was really bad timing outside of New York State.
It is ironic, Carol, because so many businesses are suffering right now because of the COVID crisis. But as you point out, gun sales are not suffering at all. But for just some of the detail here, the lawsuit alleges that Wayne LaPierre, who is really the face of the organization of the NRA, had misspent hundreds of thousands of dollars. And he had spent money on his own personal pleasures, like a private plane, visiting the Bahamas, by private air charter. The suit alleges at least 8 times. And also that he and his family were allegedly gifted the use of a 107-foot yacht. That's a pretty nice ride by an NRA vendor. And there's all sorts of other allegations about luxury cars and other perks for his family. So, Carol, it does seem like the organization has had a lot of issues, though, over the years, because many of their top officials have been forced out, including well-known people like Oliver North and also Christopher Cox, the former top lobbyist. Where do you think this will go as the election season continues to unfold?
Well, I think there has been there has been struggles within the NRA's leadership. There was an attempted ousting of LePerrier by Oliver North. He failed, so he resigned. Obviously, Christopher Cox, the legislative director, was part of that effort. He had to resign. And so there's no question there's a lot of turmoil going on in the organization. All of those things that it's alleged he got, I don't know if any of that's illegal, especially if the board of directors knew about it and authorized it. And I think that's the key. But again, putting that aside, there's two issues here. There's the internal struggles of the NRA, which I frankly don't care all that much about. And there's a lot of issues about the Second Amendment going into this election. I mean, you know, Joe Biden has already said that his gun czar would be Beto O'Rourke, who made that famous statement in a debate. Are you going to go after people's guns? And his answer was, hell yes, we're going after your guns. So that's going to be, a major issue in this upcoming campaign, especially as we see cities across the country experiencing absolute chaos and riots. And it was interesting, even last night, the mayor of Portland, who's been very friendly to the rioters, had to use the word riot when they broke into the police union building and set it on fire. He used the word, we have a riot in Portland. So that's the context I think people are going to be looking at gun issues, not the leadership and whether Wayne LePerrier got a ride on a yacht or a private flight to Bahamas. I really think for most people, the issue is going to be, can I buy a gun? Can I use a gun and to protect myself and my family? That's going to be the issue.
I think you're right about that, Carl. And things are becoming more and more heated. And Portland is just a hot mess. I mean, we've always viewed it as a liberal bastion. And certainly, you know, I always thought of San Francisco in that light and Seattle. But things are really, I think, on the verge of anarchy in Portland. Have you ever seen an American city this messed up?
In Portland, Seattle, you've had it in Minneapolis. You've had it at one time in New York City. You had it in Atlanta. I mean, this is a really interesting movement going on in this country. And I don't think it's about George Floyd anymore. This movement has, which started off as a legitimate protest against what most reasonable people saw as a terrible abuse of police power, has turned into a whole different issue. This is about young millennials, mainly white, lots of females, basically saying that the country is fundamentally corrupt and evil, and we must have a change in the system of capitalism. We must have a change in government. This is dangerous because what you're seeing here is the result of two or three generations of young people going to colleges and universities and essentially being indoctrinated about the evils of America. And lots of those people now have, after 20 or 25 years graduation, have gone into leadership positions in corporations and foundations and not-for-profits, in the media, in entertainment. And that's why you see so many corporations supporting a Marxist organization. I mean, Black Lives Matter, I'm not talking about the phrase, I'm talking about the organization, is led by two women who, on their website, proclaim and are proud of the fact that they are, quote, Marxist-Leninist trained. And you've got the corporations giving money to that. That's because the leaders of those corporations went through this college and university system 20, 25 years ago, and now you're seeing the fruit of that process and that institution in producing a whole generation of people very contrary to capitalism, very opposed to the American system of government. It's a dangerous time going forward. I really do believe that.
That's one thing we can certainly agree on, Carol. But, you know, and you're not just a guy who sits behind a desk every day. You actually teach as well as work in your firm. So what do you hear from your students about how things are going with the left and whether there's a real sort of backlash against what we know as American government for the last 200 plus years?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I've gotten very interesting responses. It's amazing how over the last 5 years, my students became quieter and quieter and less willing to participate in discussions. And many of them would come to me after the first class. And in the first class, I would always tell them who I was. I ran for office numerous times. I was a Republican and a conservative when I ran for office. And I put that right out there, that I'm going to give you a little different view of government and politics than you normally get at this university. Okay? Put that right out front. You don't have to agree with it, but every human being has biases. I'm telling you what my biases are up front, and we can talk about it. And invariably, I would get students come to me after class and literally look over their shoulders to make sure no one was within earshot and almost whisper, "Professor Calabrese, I'm a conservative too." I mean, is that level of intimidation on college campuses now about free speech? And that's one of the other characteristics of the progressive left movement, is the attempt to kill free speech, prevent speakers who have a different point of view from speaking, preventing students from speaking, for having microaggressions and free, and safe zones, and basically, many, many young people now believe that if you disagree with my position, that is verbal violence and you're making me feel unsafe, and therefore First Amendment free speech protections don't apply to you. That's where we have come on university campuses. And again, these kids graduate and they go in the real world. And I think a mistake conservatives have made, me included, is we assume that, okay, they're in college, they're leftist, but once they get out of college and get in the real world, they become more conservative over time. That does not appear to be the case. These young people leave college indoctrinated with a far left progressive agenda, and they carry it with them in their places of work and socialization. And that's dangerous. And there's lots of people suddenly waking up to the fact that the university system in this country is not doing the country a service just in terms of teaching history. That's the other thing I noticed.
But Carol, don't you think people have a right to have different points of view and that they should be discussed and debated and not feel like they have to be afraid to say anything? I think that's part of the problem, that whether it's coming from the right or the left, people need to be able to express their views more than ever, considering what's happening in our world today.
Brenda, that was the whole purpose of the university from the very beginning was, and when I went to college, that was what you did. You debated issues. And passionate debates on left and right. And you had speakers of both sides coming to the university and giving talks. That's over. Even very respected conservative scholars and authors cannot speak on college campuses today. They cannot speak. And that is a real perversion of what the university concept was always about, and that is expressing ideas, having a clash of ideas in a civilized way, and having people decide where they come down on an issue. And unfortunately, we're just not there now. How we get back to that, I don't know. It's going to take a while, because the system has been pretty much running roughshod to the left for the last 20, 25, 30 years.
Well, and Carol, I think the right has some real problems as well. I don't think it's fair to just label it a problem with the left.
It is a problem with the left on college campuses. There's no question about that. On college campuses, they are dominated by left, no doubt.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, you think about the ivory tower. I think about my days in college. But one of the things that I really valued, as you point out, is the debate and the trying to understand other points of view, trying to broaden your horizons. But people are so dug in now. I mean, there's certainly no easy answer here at all. Let's take a call. John from Rochester is on the line. Good morning, John.
Hey, Brenda. Hey, Carol.
Hi, John.
I got to say, Carol, you're absolutely right. The college campuses, there's no opposing opinions allowed by conservatives in a lot of respects. They have to have bodyguards in a lot of these campuses, but that's unbelievable. But I wanted to bring up the COVID policy by Governor Cuomo. You hear a lot now, and the media is projecting this disaster in Florida and Texas and Arizona. But if you look at the numbers, the death rate in New York State is four times that of Florida and Texas. And the thing that really bothers me about this whole thing, initially when this pandemic started, even before that, for other pandemics, they talk about herd immunity. I have not heard the word spoken by Governor Cuomo, Dr. Fauci, and some of the government officials that are supporting, I think, a failed policy of not recognizing herd immunity. There's a lot of medical, and they say, well, we got to go with the science. Well, a lot of the science says there was prominent doctors from Stanford and...
Hey, John and Carol, I would ask you to just hold a moment. We'll take a break, and John, we'll have you continue on with your question right after our timeout. Stay tuned, everybody. Much more to come on Hardline on WBEN. And welcome back to Hardline. It is Brenda Alesi flying solo today as Joe Beamer is off, but... I appreciate all the calls and texts. Been a terrific show, enjoying myself, and I appreciate you putting your 2 cents in. In fact, we had only about 1 cent in because we had to interrupt John from Rochester on his call. But, John, thank you so much for your patience in waiting through the break. And you wanted to talk about herd immunity, I believe.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, I don't know how far I got, but the COVID policy by Governor Cuomo, I think, is really flawed because I have not heard Governor Cuomo or Dr. Fauci talk about herd immunity at all. I haven't heard them even mention the term. And the media and the governor is banging the drum on the fact that Florida and Texas COVID infections have increased significantly. However, if you look at the death rate, the deaths in Florida, in Texas, New York is four times the amount of deaths. So the policy, I think, is somewhat broken as far as Governor Cuomo goes, in that he's not recognizing herd immunity. There's a lot of, and they say that it's evidenced by the fact that they're following the science. Well, there's a lot of scientists out there in medical colleges like Yale and Stanford that disagree with them as far as the tactics they're using to beat this virus. So I think what has to happen is we have to recognize herd immunity, and that's the only way to really defeat the disease permanently. I just read an article either in Forbes or Bloomberg last week regarding the country of Sweden. The country of Sweden hardly locked down at all compared to what was done in New York in the States. And right now, they have developed not complete herd immunity, but they never really locked down their schools. They didn't hardly lock down their economy, and they're having a lot of successes. So the key is, not the fact that you got increased infections in Florida and Texas. Increased infections are good in that you've got to trend toward herd immunity in order to solve this problem permanently. I think,
John, it's an interesting idea. I know you've called the show a couple of times before about that. I would refer you to an article I read about herd immunity from Johns Hopkins Medical School. And I really do try to read things that are not politically biased about the scientific end of COVID, the actual doctors who are checking this virus and the possible vaccine that they're so furiously working to find. Now, give it a look, John, if you would. Johns Hopkins Medical School about herd immunity, and I'd be interested to get your comments on that. Thanks very much, as always, John, for your input. Carol Calabrese is with us as well. And Carol, boy, you hear a lot of different things about COVID and what can be cured and what can't, and mask and not mask. Carol, you're wearing a mask on a regular basis, right?
Yes, but I hate them. Okay.
Yeah, me too. But as I've said many times, I'd rather wear a mask than a ventilator. So.
Yeah, it's just, but you know, John brought up a lot of good points, Brendan. And your last comment about Johns Hopkins University, you are absolutely correct. I would urge people that if you want an unbiased scientific look at facts, go to the Johns Hopkins COVID site. You will be amazed at the difference in terms of facts and reporting and issues
brought up there versus what you read in the newspaper or hear on the media. So you are correct, as we look at that at my place of work a lot. But, you know, John brought up some interesting points. I said this to my wife yesterday. When did we go from we have to make sure we don't overwhelm the hospital system to we can have no one contact the disease? No one can contract this disease. That's where we are now, and that's a pretty high bar.
I'll say.
And I don't think it's sustainable. The other thing is the media has done a terrible job in covering this. John is right. They've been very, very positive and easygoing on Democrat governors and brutal on Republican governors. They've been very bad in the way they report things. They don't report lots of issues like the infection rate or the death rate or the percentage of hospital beds that are being used for COVID patients. And if they do report it, you really have to search. A good example of this occurred about 10 days ago. I was reading an article about Dr. Fauci. And you had to get to the second last paragraph to read what he said about the numbers. And there were very interesting numbers. He said that 81% of people who contract COVID will have no symptoms. 81%.
Amazing, isn't it, Carol? And then other people are so badly affected by it. And you read these horror stories about how they can't breathe. And if they survive, they have some long-lasting effects. It's really amazing the difference in the way people react to this disease.
And 5% are serious. And if you look at break that down, the 5% tend to be people over 80 with comorbidities. So this is we learned a lot about this disease since it first came on in terms of how it's transmitted and how to treat it. We're making progress. And I'm hoping that this vaccine, you know, comes out and works and makes this thing go behind us.
But wouldn't that be sweet? Carol, we've got a lot of calls online. I want to get through them all before the show ends. Kevin from Pendleton is next. Hello, Kevin. Welcome.
Good morning, Brenda. And Mr. Kylie Breeze, good morning to you, sir. You know, I just heard, Ed Roth just mentioned that we need to get back to the two parties running this state. And when I hear that, I hear John F. Kennedy saying there's not a Republican way or a Democrat way, but the American way. And it looks as though we have missed that message full blank. David Bellavia, just this week, he says, and during his interview when the GOP leadership, didn't even consider him for NY27, he said to them, the future of the conservative movement and the GOP is having people like blacks, Hispanics, mixed Mongrels, maybe like me too, gays and whoever, right? And not just leadership roles, but in committees, right? And you know what was the response, Carl? You know what was the response of the Republican leadership in their actions? Here's what it was. A couple of weeks after, Donald Trump's junior's girlfriend rides into town for a big fundraiser for your conservative friends and the GOP leadership friends and says, we need to get candidates out here who signs the front of the check, not the back of it. And if this is where they're going, because, hey, in NY27, we had folks who signed the front of the check all the time, right? Okay? And by the way, this is not an endorsement of Nate McMurray in what I'm saying here. So if this is what's going on, I think this coming November, I wouldn't bother to waste my ballot on neither Donald Trump, because let's face it, Carl, you get to tell the folks Donald Trump will never win New York. So why should I be casting my ballot for Trump when all is going to happen to my ballot? It will be part of the data that folks will take to Washington to shoot the national leadership of the GOP for further access and advancement of their personal benefit in Washington and elsewhere. So we are in a real dire strait in this country, because our kids are out there burning and looting and being indoctrinated in the colleges. Right? I say this is about time, right? We fix this corrupt electoral system and let's hear those other voices. So my question to you right now is that what do you think of ranked choice voting? And don't tell me it's something from the left and we should throw it out, because you know what? I am tired of being abused, by this political system as a voter and a citizen. And I think...
Kevin, would you repeat that? I didn't catch what you said. What do I think of what?
Ranked choice voting as an option. A number of other states have done it. Because you know what? You cast your ballot in there just crossing your fingers and hoping the best. And guess what? we just voting for, we end up being a spoiler vote, and we end up getting people who don't really represent us truly, but just the parties. So,
Kevin, thank you. Thank you for the call. Carol, do you want to address that?
Yeah, you know, this right choice voting, I think I know what it is. I think it's a system where you can vote for more than one candidate. You vote for your 1, 2, and 3, and somehow a person who finishes second or third could end up winning a seat. I think that's it. I'm not too familiar with it. I think they're trying it in California. I think there's, you know, sometimes the cure is worse than the disease. The idea that somebody who finishes second or third in a ballot could end up winning, that's going to come with a whole series of problems, too. So I don't know if that's the solution to what ails us. I think what really ails us is, and Kevin addressed it, is that both parties don't have a middle anymore, okay? There's no middle ground in either party. One party is to the right and one party is to the left. And the idea of reaching across the aisle to come up with some kind of agreement is now considered taboo in both parties. I didn't grow up in that kind of system. When I went through politics, you fought your political opponents like cats and dogs during election time. But, you know, when I was supervisor of the town of Tonawanda, I had a Republican state senator, a Democrat state assemblyman. I had two Democrat county legislators and a Democrat congressman. And we worked together on all kinds of issues from youth problems and youth crime to getting rid of nuclear waste along our waterfront. After the election, you put that aside, you say, okay, now we've got to get business done. Unfortunately, those days are behind us. I don't see them coming back anytime soon. I wish they would.
You know, Carol, that's my point exactly when I say it happens on both sides. People have dug in so deeply now that there's no sense of compromise. We certainly can agree on that. Next up, we've got Bob on a cell. Bob, thank you for holding on.
Good morning. I have a couple of quick questions or comments. New York City, I've heard numbers as high as 2.5 million people have left the New York City area over the virus, living in high rises. I would wonder if anything would ever be the same there, including the Broadway plays, because those have also been shut down. But talking about presidential politics, this president has had everything thrown at him, impeachment, involvement with Russia, supposedly, FISA applications that have been lied on, and yet he is still standing. I can't think of another president that could have gone through what this president has gone through and still be there. And the main question would be Joe Biden. He is a stroke survivor, so I'm not going to poke fun at him at all. But I understand that his mind is going and that he does not have the same control that he once had. And was wondering when the debates are going to happen, if at all, and what exactly are the Democrats going to do? Because apparently there is money behind this candidacy so that the fifth column can basically take over the party once and for all. And that is a concern. And one last point, if they think this virus is bad, wait till the flu season starts up. They haven't seen anything yet. You have a very blessed day.
Appreciate you calling in, Joe, that was Bob on a cell. I don't think there's been any definitive diagnosis that Biden has had a stroke. Have you heard that, Carol?
Not a stroke. He had some type of issue like 20 years ago.
It was an aneurysm, I think, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah. I think
yes, I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
You know, I'll tell you though, Brendan, I've said this before. I don't want to stereotype anybody, but we all know that people age and they age differently. We know people who start to show signs of aging in their mid-60s, and we also know people's, you know, sharpest tacks when they're 90. Everybody's different. I've got a very, very good friend who's Joe Biden's age, and the guy is, you know, really, really on top of things. Other people I know of the same age aren't the same as they were 10 years ago. And I really think Joe Biden is showing signs of normal aging, what many people at age 78 begin to experience. And I don't know if there's going to be debates. You've already seen articles appearing in the New York Times, op-ed pieces from columnists and major Democrat strategists saying that he shouldn't debate Donald Trump because Donald Trump does nothing but tell lies and falsehoods, therefore don't get on the stage. That's not the reason. I think they're really worried about Joe Biden for 2 hours alone with Donald Trump, and what may come of that. And now Donald Trump, and I think he's absolutely right on this, says the first debate should be in early September before people start to send in mail-in votes, that there's a large number of states that will allow people to start voting for president in September, late September. And the first debate ought to occur so they have a chance to see it and see that debate before they surveil it. So we'll see. But I do think he is showing signs of his age, that he's not the same guy he was 10 years ago.
No, and I think President Trump shows it sometime too, Carol. I've noticed sometimes he has trouble reading certain things and kind of loses his train of thought and then comes back or repeats something. Have you noticed that?
No, I'll tell you what, Trump is an ad-libber. And when you try to put him on a teleprompter or a script, he has trouble with it. It's not his style. If you've never used a teleprompter, it's an acquired skill. You just don't start using it. I don't think he's comfortable with it. And his normal tendency is to digress. And get off topic and take it down different streams and then try to get back. That's what I think is going on with Trump. I think it's different between him and Joe Biden.
All right, next up on the line is Rambo Jim. Hello, Rambo Jim. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, I got a great idea that's going to win the election, definitely for President Trump, in my opinion. I'm old enough to remember now when Bush the First ran for president. And as I remember it, now I'm doing this from memory, maybe my memory, like Joe Biden, isn't as good as it used to be. But it seemed, if I remember that election right, and Carl, if I'm wrong, you correct me on this. Starting 1 or 2 days after the Labor Day weekend, all we saw every time you turned the television on was a guy named Willie Horton in his picture. Bush played up Willie Horton for everything it's worth. Now, you've got Letitia What's-Her-Face wants to disarm us and take our guns away. From the day after Labor Day weekend all the way through Election Day, every time we turn the television on, we should see a picture, her picture, and underneath the picture it should say, this gun-grabbing cockroach wants to take your guns away. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, let me say that the Willie Horton ad, interestingly enough, was not done by the Bush campaign. It was done by a political action committee, a pro-Bush committee, but it was not officially done by the campaign, although I'm sure they loved it. I do think that you're going to see Republican candidates around the country for numerous offices, not just the presidential election, using Letitia James's attempt to dissolve the NRA as, see, we told you. We told you these people really are against the Second Amendment and are after your guns. Beto O'Rourke said it. Biden said Beto O'Rourke is going to be his gun guy, and now you've got the Attorney General of New York State saying we want to dissolve the leading advocate for the Second Amendment. So, yeah, you're going to see this, and Trump's going to use it. And as I said earlier, this was a gift. This was a gift from the left that's going to keep on giving for the next several months.
Oh, my gosh, Carl, you are not kidding. It is so much a gift. I mean, the timing on this is really curious. For me to understand why she would put it forth at this point. Well, it's almost like they just, purposely put it out there to make it a mess for the Democrats.
One final point, guys, and then because there's other callers behind me, I understand that. My younger brother was saying yesterday the Amish people that live in the swing states, they ain't going for gun control. You want to talk about getting 100% of the Amish vote? This is it. In the swing states, that could be huge.
All right, Jim, thank you very much for the call. Carol, we're talking about Joe Biden and his mental acuity, and it makes the vice presidential pick all the more important. Do you think it'll be Kamala Harris, Susan Rice, or somebody else?
Well, I think the conventional wisdom, which sometimes is the worst thing to follow, says Susan Rice or Kamala Harris. If I had to guess on one of those, I think Susan Rice might have the edge. However, you know, vice presidential picks sometimes come out of left field. I mean, I can still remember Richard Nixon saying Spiro Agnew, and everybody said, what? What is a Spiro Agnew? And so you just never know. If there was going to be a dark horse, when I look at all of the potential candidates, the one that kind of grabs my attention is Senator from Illinois, Tammy Duckworth. She's a U.S. Senator. She's run for office before. She is a double amputee, having served in the Iraq War. And that could be very interesting in terms of appealing to people maybe right of center. So if I had to pick a dark horse, Tammy Duckworth would be my guess, and that's all it is at this point. I've got no inside line, and my guess is as good as anybody else's.
You know, it's funny you bring up about the surprise picks. I mean, who had really heard about Sarah Palin when John McCain picked her? There's another great example of somebody emerging from obscurity.
That's exactly correct. And, there's lots of calculations that go into picking a VP. It used to be geographic. It's not so much geographic anymore. It's more ideological and what groups you appeal to, regardless of state. So, as I say, I think the conventional wisdom says Kamala Harris, and Susan Rice, they both have pluses, they both have minuses, but you never know with a dark horse. And as I say, when I look at the potential list of 10, 11 of possible candidates for VP, Tammy Duckworth kind of jumps out at me, having a unique set of qualities and characteristics.
Absolutely. Well, Carol, what do you expect? We've got about 30 seconds left. What do you expect to happen in politics this week? How's that for a loaded question?
Hey, what? You can bank on this. I expect the unexpected.
Exactly. It's ever evolving, is it not?
Crazy year, Brenda. Just when you think there are no more hammers to give you a hammer blow on the side of the head, you get another hammer blow. So,
yeah, that's right. Put your helmet on. Make sure you got your helmet on. Carol Calabrese, who is a partner at Masiello Martucci Calabrese, and always a wonderful analyst and a fine gentleman taking time on his weekend to come on the show with us. Carol, thanks a million. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brenda. Always enjoy.
Thank you. Well, that'll put a wrap on this edition of Hardline. Thanks very much to Jerry Craig for taking care of all the business behind the scenes. And I look forward to talking with you next week. Brenda Alesi, Hardline, right here on News Radio 930 WBEN.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.